Good evening, Sunday night. Lili Nishmas Chaim Ephraim Ben Nosson. And if you're following in the sefer we're using, so we're going to start from page Kuf Lamed Zayin, around 8 lines up, the Im Yomar Odom. And the Chavir Lodos goes off on a tangent now, and probably the whole night tonight will be off on that tangent, and we'll come back. Next week, he really gets into the kishkas of hishtadlus, the whys and wheres, and you know all the, hopefully the nuances of hishtadlus. Although, you know, he'll never address the particular case that we have to grope with. It's always going to be principles, klolim, right? He can't talk to the very every case that we grapple with. And one thing I learned as a rabbi, so I may share that with you, that, you know, it's amazing. Let's say you know halacha. Let's say. But when you're asked a question, it's always not quite, there's always some twist that it's not quite the standard classic case. It's always, there's a little difference, and then maybe that makes a big difference in halacha. And you have to think about it, and so, you know, the same, certainly with Bitochen and Hishtadlus, where the rules are not as, don't seem to be as objective, so certainly we can learn Chavis Halvodas, and you could say, I didn't really get any smarter. You could think that, because I still don't know what to do when I'm faced with X, Y, Z, so what good did my learning do? But it did a lot of good, because we're learning the principles. And hopefully, b'hemshech hazman, we gain experience. Maybe in the beginning, you have to ask a shayla. After a while, maybe you develop your own internal barometer. But you use the principles to. Certainly, every case is different. That's life. So you learn to extrapolate from the principle to the particular case at bar. But that's all going to be next week. This week, we're going to probably spend the whole night on the tangent. What's the tangent? That Chavis Halvodas said that the reason we have to work, he's focusing on work and earning money, which really consumes a person's life, basically. It really does. Basically, you see from the Chavis Halvodas, and it's reality, it's mitzius. That's, you know, he talks about hishtadlus, and all of a sudden he just keeps talking about parnosa and earning money, and how do you earn money, and what do you do about parnosa? That's what makes the engine run. That's what makes us live, really. We have to earn money. So he said, so why did Hashem do that to us for? And he's not happy to just say, well, that's b'zei asapecha toch alechem. Chavis Halvodas doesn't believe that. He believes that, based on the pasuk he brings down, that it's built into the fabric of the world before the chet of Adam Arishon, that a person should struggle for parnasa, should struggle in order to exist. So what does he say? He says it's not to create money. We're not working to create the money. The money is created because Hashem decrees it. We're working to create the opportunities for our spiritual development. That's reason number one. That's why Hashem set up the system that way, because within the context of being engaged in the world, we come across our nisyonos, we come across our bechira, we come across our choices that we make, how we're going to live. And if the money came down the chimney, or we opened the door and there was the money that we needed for that day, like the mon, so we wouldn't have these opportunities. We wouldn't grow. The context in which Hashem gave us bechira and gave us choices to make is as we struggle through daily life. That's reason number one. And reason number two is that idleness breeds problems, and it wouldn't be productive for our ruchnius to be idle.
Why was the mon so obvious and now it's not? I mean, I know if you look for it,
the mon was more than obvious. The mon negated what the Chavis Halvodas is talking about now. The mon negated any hishtadlus whatsoever. you woke up and there was the mon.
Okay, but some people, the mon was closer to their tent than others, and that was also a form of ishtadlus or a way to perfect yourself.
Well, it was more like a message. But the etzem, the 40 years in the midbar was Hashem telling Bnei Yisrael, you know, you have to be in Kolel for 40 years. Really, it was a Kolel experience where Hashem said, I'll give you parnasa, you're not going to work. And your wives are also not going to work. I'm just going to send you parnasa. No, Hashem wanted Klal Yisrael to sit and learn for 40 years and absorb the Torah into the fiber of the nation.
But then why their parnasa was obvious that it came from Hashem?
It was obvious because there was no need for hishtadlus. It was much more than obvious. It negated the whole hishtadlus experience. But go on. I'm not correcting you. I'm saying it was a lot more than just being obvious. It cut out the hishtadlus with which Hashem created the world.
Why is the way we live now, why is it built in such a way that...
That was the Chayes HaLovus' question. These are his two answers. One is we make our Bechira choices in life when we struggle, as we go through life. And if we just had a Mon experience, we in the Madrega we are on. Bnei Yisrael and the Midbar were a whole different, you know, they had different Nisyonos, they had a different Bechira, they had to develop their Emunah in Hashem. They had just come from Mitzrayim, and they had this Torah, like, they had to, like, deal with this new reality of life. So Hashem said, you know, you're going to just sit and bond with the Torah, and I'm going to, you know, no Parnassah issues, and that's all. And you're going to always experience the nace of the mon. It wasn't just no hishtadlus. They didn't walk out their door and find food. That would have been amazing. But it was much more. They saw nisim. They saw water come from a rock and lechem come down min hashamayim. And that was, so there was a lot going on in the midbar. Hashem didn't want them to deal with hishtadlus. They were in a midbar, indeed. They weren't, they not just physically, not just geographically, they were conceptually in the midbar. Hashem was menatek them from anything, and they had to develop and absorb and internalize the Torah, like a whole system of life that was so different than anything that ever existed in the world up till then. And that, so they could have done it in a year. But the Chet HaMeraglim intruded, and it took 40 years. But your question is Mamash the Chayvus HaLovus' question. So why doesn't Hashem always do that? And his answer is, again, his answer is not the Chet of Adam HaRishon. It's not his answer. His answer is that that's the basic world that Hashem... It's for Ruchniyistika reasons. That's his answer. That our Bechira, our choices, our spiritual development, which comes through the choices we make, is found in that arena. It's found in the arena of the daily struggle to get through the day, to get through the month, to get the mortgage payment, right? To put bread on the table. This is where it's found. Are you going to steal? Are you going to be honest? Are you going to keep Shabbos? Are you going to talk Lashon Hara? Are you going to get angry? Are you going to lose bitachon? Are you going to cheat? Are you going to cut corners? Are you going to go to daven with a minion? He's talking to the man now. Are you going to take a break in the middle of the day in order to daven mincha with a minion? It's not easy for many people. I don't know how it is here. I know, you know, in America, like, that's a big deal to stop your day in the middle and go daven mincha with a minion. These are all the nisyonos, whether it's been Adam Achavero or it's been Adam Lamokom, to eat kosher. You know, you're working, it's the middle of the day, and, you know, it's a questionable heksher. That's what he says. This is all in the struggle of daily life is found our bechira and our choices and our spiritual development. And the second reason is that if we'd be idle, we can't recreate the midbar experience where we're sitting and learning. He quotes Pirkei Avos, Tov Torim Derech Eretz, Yegia Shneiha Mashkachas Avon. It keeps us busy, keeps us out of trouble. If we'd be idle, then, I-D-L-E, If we'd be idle, then we'd get into trouble. That's the human condition. We would look for things to do. We would look for ways to fill up our spare time. Look at life today. Look what happens when people have idle time. They don't necessarily, by a long shot, fill it with virtuous things. So that's the second reason. So that's what he said. Then he says, moving along, he then says that it follows logically. This we've been learning the last few weeks. Then he says that it follows logically that if a tzaddik, if a person who's already spiritually developed, who's energetic in his avodas Hashem, he's not idle. When he's idle, he uses it to do good works, to be involved in chesed, to learn, to daven longer. He uses his spare time, and he's energetic. He's not idle. So if you have such a person, and the person has already either he's made his choices already. He's already on a different plane. He's making already higher choices, right? Whether it's in his davening or his hanhoga with people, he's on a different plane, plane, right? He's on a different level of choices. So it would follow logically, the Chayvus Halbava says, that such a person would find parnasa easygoing. It would be easy for him to have parnasa. If the reasons for parnasa are those that I mentioned, the Chayvus Halbava says, you're not really creating wealth, no matter what Adam Smith says. You're not creating wealth. Hashem said on Rosh Hashanah how much money you're going to have. You're going through these motions because of the reasons we said. So he then says, okay, so it follows logically that as a person develops and as a person grows and as a person moves beyond that, so his parnasa, his or her daily struggle in life would get easier and easier and easier because these reasons lessen, they dissipate, they don't, they're not there anymore. You've already proven yourself. Okay, then Chesavoda says, but it's not like that all too often. That's his next question. Yomar ha'adam. So if a person says, Hinenu roim, we see, Miktus ha'tzadikim, it's not like that. Now the Chavis HaLovas, he takes this like smaller question, and he gets us into the much larger, he sort of segues into the larger question of Tzadik V'Ralo and Rasha V'Tovlo. That's what he does in this parenthetical, he goes off on a tangent because he's talking about this, and so he wants to know why tzaddikim, why good people sometimes, he says sometimes, struggle with parnasa, and why evil people who should be the first to be given the opportunity for spiritual growth, right? They, for them, like, right. And they have it easy. They're rich, and they won the lottery, and they got a Yerusha, or they went into high tech. They don't even have to work, right? They have it easy, and they need the spiritual development more. And the tzaddikim, who seem to be spiritually developed to a large degree, they struggle. They struggle every month, and it doesn't seem to follow from what I just said. The Chavis HaLovas says it's not working. And then he just drops, so to speak, that particular prat, and he blows it up into the large, because that's really the answer. The answer is that this is, that if it would come to a question of parnosa and why this is happening, then logically, indeed, the tzaddik would be, right now, Raisi Gamzakanti, Velora Isi Sadik Nezum, Velarum Bavakesh Lochem. The Tzaddik has it easy. He doesn't, there's no need for his Hishtadlus and Parnoso. It's lessens. It should be lessening as time goes on. Or at least, even, as a person spiritually develops, his need for Hishtadlus should be lessening. Because we said his whole reason for it is to develop spiritually, and he goes on to greater things. So his answer is, and that's why he's all of a sudden talking about Tzadik Viralo and Rosh HaVetovlo, which is, well, like that's way beyond the scope of Bitachon and Ishtadlus, but that's because that's what it is. He said, in his segueing into the much larger philosophical issue of Tzadik Viralo and Rosh HaVetovlo, he's really providing an answer to his Parnassa question, which is, indeed, it doesn't make sense. Indeed, the tzaddik should have parnasa easier. Indeed, the rasha should have to struggle with parnasa more. And the reason we sometimes find it not happening that way is because of the tzaddik viralo rasha v'tovlo issue. It's not a local. He provides the answer by that segue. He's saying it's not a local issue. It's not local. It's a global issue. It's a universal issue. It's not just parnasa and ishtadlus and bitachon. This is why tzaddikim have it rough, and why tzaddikim are persecuted, and why tzaddikim sometimes have very difficult lives in terms of all the issues that they face. And Rishon seemed to be, you know, sitting back on the patio and smoking cigars. And you know, just you know, checking the stock, just checking how their stock doubled yesterday. So that's what he says. And now he goes into the inyan of Rosh HaVetovlo and Tzadik Viralo. He says miktsas. People don't realize, perhaps, you know, if you would take a general, the Kuzari makes the following point. He says, you know, Golos has not been a pleasant experience for the Jewish people. But if you really step back and take an honest look at history, the Jew in Golos lived better than the peasants, than the Goyim, than the Hamonam that he was with. They were healthier, they were more educated, they were more refined. Maybe if you compared them to the noblemen, if you know history, if you compare them to the noblemen and the priests and the upper class, so they were downtrodden and persecuted and chased from town to town, and sometimes there were pogroms. We know our history in Golos. But the Kuzari says, but really, we see the Hashem took care of Bnei Yisrael in Golos. If you look at their lives, like if you step back and look at how they lived more pleasant lives. They had nachas from their children. Golos intruded. They were chased out, and they went. You know, they were chased out, or they were persecuted. This is, we're not going to explain everything that happened throughout 2,000-year history now. But in general, if you look at their lives when they, right, for the 100 years, 200 years, 300 years that they were in country X, Y, Z, they lived much better than the goyim they were around. They. Because they were clean, you know, says Hashem, they weren't sick, they were clean, they were educated. Your average guy, you know your history, he was a boorish, illiterate peasant who they lived, they envied the Jews. A lot of the tzoros were caused by their envy of the Jews who had homes, who had clean homes, who had families. So he says, what am I saying this for? When we say Tzadik Viralo Rosh HaVetovlo, if you step back and take a look and you look at people, tzaddikim have good lives. Good people have good lives. Right? Let's talk about drugs. We'll talk about drugs for a second. Right? So the frum world was speared the drug culture that overtook America, that overtook the world. Of course it made inroads. No one's blind to that. But you have to realize it's inroads, and it was 20, 30, 40 years later that it started hitting home, because inevitably when you're in Golos, everything makes inroads into our lives too. But, right, if you look at the, you know, if you look at divorce rates and crime rates and drug rates and, you know, and prison terms and this, it's pretty much tzaddik v'tovlo, rasha v'ralo, right? You don't find your average, the average from Jew, you know, Orthodox Jew, someone who's following Torah or doing his or her best to follow Torah, doesn't go out and get drunk on Saturday night and their car is wrapped around a lamppost, you know, at 3 a.m. So the tzaddik v'ralo and rasha v'tovlo phenomena is an exception. In real life, it really is an exception to the rule. It's an exception that has to be dealt with. It's a basic question. Why does it ever happen? Moshe Rabbeinu demanded of Hashem to know why it ever happened. But when the Chayim Salvador says the word miktsas, some, and some, so it's only some. In general, life favors a person who lives a good life. Right? We say, Ashrecha v'tovlach, Ashrecha b'olam hazeh, v'tovlach l'olam haba. If you think of a person that keeps Shabbos and their family life, if this kibud av va'aim, you know, if you follow the Torah, you know, kibud av va'aim, nachas from children, the family gathers around the Shabbos table, it's pretty good. You know, if you know how, you know, people who don't have Torah don't have such pleasant lives. They never did in history. I'm talking as a general rule, of course. I'm not talking, I'm not matching up, right? Reuven to Johnny. Talking in general, society. But we are a very demanding people. And Moshe Rabbeinu, who got the Torah from Hashem, demanded to know of Hashem. Hashem is kelem unavein oval. Hashem is perfect. If there's no such thing. Well, you know, in general, it's pretty good. You know, so I slipped up a couple times, Moshe. You know, cut me some slack, man. No, not with Hashem. Hashem is kelem unavein oval. There's no slack to Hashem. If there's one case where chas v'shalom, it's not fair, that we can't live with that. We don't accept that. We demand to understand that. Why is there ever tzaddik v'ralo? Why is there ever rasha v'tovlo? Doesn't make, why? How could it be? How could it be? How could it ever be? Hashem is perfect. Hashem's always running the world. Hashem is not ignoring any part of the world. So how could it ever exist? And this is a question that Chaim Salvador now asks. In asking it, again, I'll repeat, please forgive me, he's really answering his Parnosa question. Like sometimes you ask a question and the teacher says, or you know, whoever you're asking the question to says, it's a very good question, but it's not the local question that you're asking. This is a universal question. This is just part of a universal issue. And that's what the Chaim Salvador does here. He's saying, I've developed the logic and the need, I've developed the logic of the need for Hishtadlus and Parnasa. It therefore follows logically that the more shalem a person is, the more developed he or she is in their Avodas Hashem, the less they should have to struggle for Parnasa. The less developed they are, the more they should have to struggle for their Parnasa. But it's not always like that. How come? And then he starts talking about tzaddik v'ralo rasha v'tovlo, because he's, and in that he's saying, Rabosai, it's a universal question. It's not a small potatoes local inyan. This is a general, global, universal, world-shattering question. And then he says, and so the first thing the Chayim Salvador says before he answers it, or before he attempts to answer it, or before he attempts to explain it, he says, you didn't ask the question, and it's not, I'm not teaching you Chayim Salvador, and you thought it is a great question. This question has been asked by Nevi'im. He happens not to say Moshe Rabbeinu, but all the, you know, just about, virtually all the Mepharshim say, that when Moshe Rabbeinu says Hodieni Noes Derachecha in the parsha that we'll be reading, not this Shabbos, but next Shabbos, when he says Hodieni Noes Derachecha, he's asking, the Gemara in Brachas says, why is Rasha V'tovlo and Tzadik V'ralo? He's asking that major question. He's demanding, and Hashem answers him, V'ra'isa Sachoroi Uponai Lo Yeirou. Hashem answers him, I really can't answer you. There are some things that are hidden from human seichel. You can get a glimpse and a glimmer of understanding, but you will never fully understand Darkei Hashem. Now, that's like a whole class in itself. I'm not really doing justice to it at all. But that, those are the words of the pasuk. For Isos Achoroi, you will see my back, so to speak. Uponai lo yera'u, but you won't see my front. The Chasam Sofer, I'll say over something for my father-in-law, of Ashalom now, in his Sefer, about the Holocaust. So he quotes the Chasam Sofer as saying that we understand many things after it happens. That's what the pasuk means. After something happens, we could look back and we could say, oh, you know, I understand it. I see after 5 years has gone by, after 10 years have gone by, after 20 years have gone by, I see why this had to happen, and I see, you know, we have experienced this in our personal lives too. Someone doesn't get married till they're relatively old, you know. And then she gets married, and then she says, oh, now I see, because this is my husband. And 5 years ago, we wouldn't have been right for each other. I see, because I know what I was 5 years ago, and he knows what he was 5 years ago. And we wouldn't have connected 5 years ago. So, you know, afterwards, I say, oh, hey, Hashem knows what he's doing. How do you like that? And, you know, so that's how we live. That we can... And we never really know, of course. You know, we think we know. Like I said about Yosef and the brothers, right? He said, now I know why you sold me into slavery, so that I should provide food for a famine, for Mitzrayim, for Canaan. L'achios amrav, ki l'michya shlachani elokim. And what's the joke? We're sitting there smiling, because that wasn't even the real reason. Right, he thought now I understand everything. Wow, I was sent to save the world from starvation. And he did. He mamash saved the world from starvation. But that wasn't even the real reason. The real reason was, I mean, it's wheels within wheels. The ultimate reason was to start off the Mitzrayim process, to start off the Shibud in Mitzrayim. That was the real reason. But he didn't even perceive that yet. So like we sometimes, you know, 20 years after the Holocaust, 30 years after the Holocaust, 40 years after the Holocaust, 50 years after the Holocaust. So we say, you know, my father, Olav HaShalom, you know, and that's what my father-in-law, Olav HaShalom Sefer, is about, like looking back and trying to discern, you know, not why, but what was, like, what effect it had. Like, oh, so now I can understand what happened here. But that's all afterwards. That's what the Chasam Sofer says. In hindsight, we can try to discern historical patterns. We can try to discern what Hashem is doing here. Upanai lo hero, but you can't figure out what Hashem is doing when it's happening. You don't really know. It's unfathomable. You could try to understand Tzadik Varalo and Rosh Avitovlo. Sometimes you understand it after three generations have gone by, right? Sometimes, you know, Russia has money, the Chazal Vavas will say in a few lines, and his grandson will do tshuva, and his grandson was Yorish all the money, and his grandson has the money. So that's the issue. So the first paragraph in this tangential part of the Chazal Vavas Shaar HaBitachon is saying that we didn't think of the question, as smart as we are. The Nevi'im asked the question, and he doesn't say Moshe Rabbeinu, but the Nevi'im, and he quotes a few psukim in Nevi'im. Madua derech Rishon Solecha, why is the way of Rishon successful? Yirmiyahu asks, Loma tareini oven, why do you show me injustice? Vishod v'chomos lenegdi, robbery, and the breakdown of society is in front of me. Chavakuk says, Ki Rosha Machter is Hatzadik, the Rosha rules over the Tzadik. Tachrish, how can you be silent, Hashem? Kivala Rosha Tzadik Mimenu, when the Rosha consumes the Tzadik. Hine Eile Rishoim, Vishalvei Olam Hiskuchoyel, the Rishoim seem to be serene and comfortable and powerful and they're not afraid of anything. And he brings out a few psukim in Tehillim and in other places in Nach, where this question is being asked. So he's saying, it's not a new question. So relax. You didn't think of this question. Then he's, and Valmer Acher Blashem Doro, then he says, the Navi never provides an answer. Very it's important to realize that, because the Chavis HaVavis is going to launch and give us a bunch of explanations that he's just going to throw at us. You know how many reasons there could be for Tzadik, for Rallo? He's going to say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's going to give us 6 reasons. One-liners. He's going to be batting out one-liners. And Rosh of the Tovlo, he then says, boom, 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 boom. So he wants you to understand, he's obviously not, he knows it's not satisfying. And he'll explain what he's doing. So that's why his first paragraph, when he raises the issue, is the Nevi'im asked the question. It's not a new question. And they didn't give an answer. Why didn't they give any answers? He says, the Nevi'im asked the question, they didn't give any answers. Why not? Elisha Kitzer Hanavi Bitshuvaso, he says, the Navi either didn't give an answer or gave very abrupt or short answers, because there's no one answer. And they shasibas call echad ben atzadikim hamisnas and call echad ben arashom ashleim b'olam hazeh zulas hasibah shel achad. Every case is different, he says. The ways of Hashem are hidden from us, ultimately. Right, we say, "Ki lo machshav al sai machshav al seichem, v'lo darcheichem derochoi ne'um Hashem." Hashem, we can't. We have to recognize that it's a humbling thought. It's a humbling thought. We can't understand everything, and as much as Torah and Judaism and Frumkeit demands and insists that we understand everything, we're not a cult. Torah is seichel. Hashem is described as seichel, the supreme rationality, and our learning Torah and everything we learn, everybody in this room experiences learning. We question and we encourage questions. Not this year, but we encourage questions after this year. When I'm running out of the door, I say, I don't have time. You can always email me. We encourage, Torah is very rational. There's nothing irrational in Torah. We want to understand, we want to explain, we question, we delve into things, we demand to know why this should make sense, why this is so. So it's very humbling to be told that at the end of the day, there are things that are unfathomable to us. Hashem is just, we can't fathom Darkei Hashem. Hashem does things that we can't really understand. And you know, it's funny almost, because he then explains it. But he doesn't really explain it. He gives possible, he doesn't want us to become apikorsim, right? We have to maintain our faith. And the Chavis Halvavis is okay. This is the Chavis Halvavis. You know, he doesn't say, you got to believe. You're Jewish, you got to believe. He doesn't do that. He doesn't let... Chavis Halvavis is very... We've seen this all along throughout the Sefer. Chavis Halvavis is very scientific, very rational. He wants us to do things because we understand what we're doing. So even when we're faced with this unfathomable beast, with this Hanhogas Hashem that the Nevi'im questioned, and they didn't provide answers, because she says because there's no one answer. Every case is different. You can't give a rule, you can't quantify it, you can't put it in a box and wrap it up and summarize it and write it down in a book. All you can do is, so the Nevi'im didn't bother. The Nevi'im didn't bother giving an answer because there's no one answer. Sometimes this is the reason, sometimes that's the reason. Hashem is looking at the scope of history. Hashem is not looking at that particular moment in time. Sometimes he does, you know. Again, these are exceptions. Tzadik V'Ra'lo and Rosh HaVetovlo are bumps in the road. They're not the norm of life. So the Navi doesn't give an answer because it's ultimately unfathomable. He really doesn't say that. Wait. Chaim Soloveitchik says that the Navi doesn't give an answer because the answer is going to be different in every case. I'm suggesting an interpretation. So what? You know, why can't the Navi do what Chaim Soloveitchik does now? Boom, boom, boom. Here's six possibilities for Tzadik V'Ra'lo. Here's five possibilities for Rosh HaVetovlo. He means, it's different in every case, and you know, it's unfathomable. It's just beyond us because this. You'll see when he says his reasons, you'll realize that we can never apply the reasons. We can never point to a particular case and say, oh, this is reason number three of the Chayvus Halvavus. We can't. It's things that are beyond our ability to comprehend. If he says, for example, the person's going to have a grandson, a Rosh HaVetovlo will be because the grandson will do tshuva, or the Tzadik V'Ra'lo is as a nisayon, or because of an avera he did when he was 22 years old, he spoke Lashon Hara, and Hashem wants to cleanse him so that his Gan Eden will be whole. We never have the right to say that. We never can look at a tzaddik suffering and saying, hey man, he must have talked Lashon Hara once in his life, and he's getting his now. But we can't say that. We don't know if that's the reason. Maybe it's the other reason, he says. Maybe it's a nisayon to give him more Olam Haba, to increase his reward. Like Eov, right? Eov was tested, according to the story that we're given in Nach, Eov was tested in order to increase his schar, in order that he overcome a nisayon. It's almost a conundrum, right? Why is he getting yisurim so that he should withstand the yisurim and get more schar? Like, that doesn't seem very fair, but that's a derech Hashem. That's called yisurim shalava. You might have heard the phrase, yisurim shalava is when Hashem is sending yisurim for no other reason other than you should continue to believe in Hashem. I'll tell you something I just saw. It was very inspiring to me. So there was a story in the Jerusalem Post on Friday about potatoes, Shemitah potatoes, that farmers who planted on the Het HaMechira in the seventh year, using the Het HaMechira, even the ones who use Het HaMechira, so their crops were ruined by the frost, by the cold weather. And it was an article about Otzah Haaretz, and the Otzah Haaretz farmers who made sure to plant their potatoes before Rosh Hashanah, so their crops, there was a natural development. It was because they had grown a little already, so they survived the frost. So that's what the article was about. Jerusalem Post this past Friday. So one guy says, oh, you see, Hashem, it's a miracle, and Hashem is making a statement here. He says, you know, but they're all kippas for God people, right? So he's careful to say, not that the people who did Het HaMechira are doing an Aveira Chas HaShalom, I don't mean that, of course, but you see, Hashem doesn't want you to plant Shemitah, that's for sure, we all agree on that. So this is his way of telling us that. I know, okay. Then the last two paragraphs, Rav Amichai speaks. Rav Amichai I've become very friendly with. He's the de facto head of Otzah Haaretz. And he says, don't talk like that. He says, we really should not talk that way. Because it could have easily have occurred. What would we have done if the potatoes of the Otzah Haaretz people would have gotten ruined and the potatoes of the Het HaMechira people would have survived? What would we have said then? So we would have dropped the whole Otzah Haaretz and run to do Het HaMechira? He says, a Jew, we don't understand things that Hashem does, and we do what seems to us to be the right thing to do. This is the head of Otzah Haaretz now. And you know, that's all, and we don't. So why was that so poignant to me? Because his son was just killed by terrorists 3 weeks ago. Rav Amichai's son was from the kids hiking by Hebron, and they killed his son. So, like, I could hear him saying that, like, and this is, you know, like, I heard the pain in his voice. I knew where he was coming from. Maybe he couldn't have said this. You know, he's a tzaddik, he's a fantastic person, but I was thinking to myself, maybe he couldn't have said this a month ago, but now that his son was killed by a terrorist and he had to maintain, you know, we shouldn't be in such a situation, right? And he had to maintain his emunah and his belief in Hashem and his simcha, and he had to be strong, and he lived through that, and now it's like a week later, and someone comes to the potato crop. Hey, it's a miracle, it's a miracle. He says, calm down. Things don't always go the way we'd like them to go. And you can't base your life. You can't do that. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear this kind of talk. We do Otsa Haaretz because we think it's the right way to go. Don't tell me stories with potatoes. And, you know, I'm saying to myself, you know, he's thinking about his son. He's thinking about his son, you know. His son was killed in the prime of, you know, a 21-year-old kid shot. So that's, we don't know Darkei Hashem. See, why was this guy killed? He was learning and he was doing for Klal Yisrael and he was in the army and he loved Eretz Yisrael. Well, why? You know, we don't know why. And all the answers of the Chayyus Halavus, you know, so we don't know. Oh, maybe this is the answer. Maybe we don't know. We don't know why. Right, the famous Medrash that Boaz died the next morning after he married Ruth. Right? People, so you got to figure, like, the editorials. I told you shouldn't have married her, right? I told you she was usher to Klal Yisrael. He died the next... What do you need more proof than that? He died the next morning. Boom. Right? And she gave birth to Mashiach. It was not incorrect, right? Then there's a story, you've heard of Pesel Micha in Tanakh. So this guy makes an idol that ultimately is extremely damaging to the Jewish people. And a lot of people are nichshel in it, and it really, it's machshel a lot of people. So he's looking for a high priest. Micha, who made the idol, is looking for a high priest. He's looking, he has a job. He's looking for a rabbi. He's looking for a high priest for his idol, and he finds this guy. The Nach tells the story. I'm making up the story. It's in the Nach. He finds this guy who punk walks in, and he's Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson, and he offers him the job, and he takes it, and he says it. And this is a pasuk in Nach. A guy makes an idol that's machshel Klal Yisrael. And he says, now I know Hashem likes what I'm doing. Look who I found to be the high priest of my idol. Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. I mean, come on.
So that's Hashkacha practice.
Right, that's what he said. He brought proof that what he was doing was correct. And that's what Rabbi Michai is saying. And that's what happened by Boaz. We don't ultimately know Darkei Hashem. Be very, very careful about using what happened as the proof about the correctness of your actions. That's what Rabbi Michai is saying. He's saying, we do Otsa Haaretz because we feel that's right. And if our crop would have gotten ruined, and the Heta Mechira people's crop would have survived, we wouldn't have said, oh, we were wrong. You got to do Heta Mechira, right? You can't prove that. It's very important in life. This has to do with the unfathomableness, if there's such a word, of Darkei Hashem. You can't. It's very dangerous to say Hashem's doing this, and it's therefore a siman that we should move to Eretz Yisrael because look what happened. After you make a move because you feel it's the right thing to do, you then could look back and say, look what Siyata Dishmaya we had, and you could get chizuk from that. That's what the Chassam Sofer said. That's the Chassam Sofer, right? You could look back afterwards when you did something and it's mechazik you, but it's not a proof. It's never a proof, and you can't know. And I don't do like Micha. Micha said, "Oh boy, I'm opening for business tomorrow." Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson works for me. Yeah.
Two things. First of all, maybe it was something like the Choval Yedei Chayim, because didn't Moshe Rabbeinu save Micha? Micha wasn't supposed to live. He pulled him out of a brick. So maybe, and then it was Nechshol Bnei Yisrael, so in Dakka showing Moshe Rabbeinu's son.
Whatever it is, but it wasn't what Micha said. It wasn't Hashem wants me to have this idol. That's all I mean to say.
Oh, now my husband remembered that the Rav maybe said once.
I deny it.
Okay. That one, when the rockets were falling on Haifa, that was because they expelled the people from Gush Katif. So now we're feeling.
I never would say because. I'm not a Navi. I'm not a Navi. I.